Let's start with a prayer for those in and out of these aisles. I'm going to do the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay. And I'm going to give it over to Susan.
All right. So now we're moving into relationships, intimacy, and sexuality. Check my time. Yes. So like I said, I started overeating when I was 8. And that was when my parents got divorced. And then when I was 10, my father died and I started getting fat. That's what people told me, was that I was getting fat. I actually think that I was filling out. Women get hips just like they get breasts. I did not get breasts, but I did get hips. I've always been a pear, and they called that fat. So, and then I went on the binge diet thing until I got here. So my teens were all about trying to lose weight. If I could only lose weight, everything would be all right. That's what we talked about earlier. I'd have a boyfriend, my family would love me, all of that stuff would happen when I lost weight. And around that time, I found some books in my mother's closet. My parents, it was before my dad died, so I was 8 or 9. And the books in my mother's closet were sex books, all about how to have good sex and how to, you know, it was the 70s. It was the sexual revolution. And I couldn't understand why they were in her closet. And I asked her a lot of questions about them. And she got defensive. And I said, well, why do you even have these books? And she said, because your father and I had a lousy sex life. And in inventory, much later on in life, I realized what I did with that information was that sex was very powerful. It could break up a marriage. It could make me lose my daddy. And therefore very scary. So, and also my mother was at the front of the sexual revolution. And I saw things and heard things that I shouldn't have heard as a young woman. In the 80s, we called that emotional incest. That seems a little strong. She was doing the best she could. That attitude also came out of working the steps. And my mother taught me to be calm, cool, and collected, which is not me at all. I'm sensitive, emotional, intuitive, passionate. And the way for me to be calm, cool, and collected was to overeat, was to stuff it all down. And then I would see her being sexual, which I shouldn't have seen, and that was not calm, cool, and collected. And she didn't sound calm, cool, and I was like, what is that? That's like a monster. That's not my mother. And I didn't want to be out of control like that either. That seemed not good. It was very confusing to me. So I never dated. I didn't date in high school. And of course, in my mind, it was because I was fat. If only I were thin, I would date. If only I were thin, I'd have boyfriends. When really, it was serving me because I was terrified. I was terrified of being sexual and being desired. I didn't go to my prom, which was absolutely devastating for me. I know a lot of us didn't. I actually asked someone to go, which we really didn't do then. And he said no. And for years, I was devastated. It was actually recently that I finally got over it, mostly because I have a good life and because I go to my reunions. I'm really like Cinderella at the ball in my reunions. And I also realize when I talk to people and just in the movies, I realize I don't think I missed very much by missing the prom. And then I started to have, I had three boyfriends, but I was committed to being a virgin because I was terrified. And so my first boyfriend quite naturally was gay. He didn't know it at the time, but he told me later, and I thought, well, that makes perfect sense. He didn't want to be with a woman, and I didn't want to have sex. Then I did have two boyfriends, and I had sex for the first time when I was 21 and a half, like one day before I turned 22. So that's pretty late, and it's just because I was so scared, and I was actually 13th stepped. That was in OA before 30 years ago. I don't count that because I was using OA as a diet. And I don't mind. I just wanted to get it over with. It was just like this thing that I just needed to get it over with. And then I had two boyfriends after that. And those were the alcoholic boyfriends, that were, verbally abusive relationships. And I had no concept of receiving pleasure myself. So eventually I ended up in, and I broke up with the last boyfriend, and he's the one who got sober, and I thought, well, if he can do it, so can I, and I came to OA. And I was determined to die single and happy. I did not, I was done with men. And I went to a retreat and met my future husband. So I did meet my husband in OA, and we dated for 2 years before we got married, and we took very seriously what it says in the OA AA 12 and 12 in the 12th step about boy meets girl on OA campus, and that there are things we have to be careful of. So we took our time, and we prayed and meditated, and 2 years later we were married. So he married a woman who was very, very shut down. And I married a man who was shut down. Neither one of us have much experience. His first wife was a lesbian. She didn't know it when she got married, but she realized it as she was married. So that says something about his experience, too. And so it worked fine because we were both shut down. And then I lost weight and began my recovery and did inventories, sexual inventories. And as I lose weight, I begin to feel sexual. So it's very handy to be overweight and not feel sexual. And actually, the more weight I lose, the more sexual I feel. Not because I'm prettier, just because I'm not stuffing down those feelings anymore. So I started to push him for sex. I'm the one that changed the contract, not him. And I made it his fault, and I made him wrong, and I knew intellectually from being in these rooms that it's not appropriate to try and change somebody else, but this was different. He would be happier, and I would be happier, and we'd be good. So I pushed and pushed and pushed, and I wasn't very nice about it. And eventually he said, maybe we should get a divorce. You could have knocked me over. I was stunned. It was very painful for me. And I was on my knees crying and turned my marriage over to my higher power and said, whatever you want, it's yours. I don't care if we divorce. I don't care if one of us or both of us dies. My way isn't working. It's yours. And a lot of things happened then. What actually started me believing in a higher power was this magic just happens with the steps. That eventually, it was a lot of icky stuff that eventually had me writing a fourth step. And in that fourth step, I did a lot of inventory on my dad who died. And in the eighth step, I did forgiveness of my dad. For dying, but also for not loving me the way he loved my brother. So I have a twin brother who he was the apple of my dad's eye. He was the apple of my mother's eye, too. And I thought that meant my dad didn't love me. And in my forgiveness work, I realized just because he loved my brother, it doesn't mean he didn't love me. And as I talked to relatives, I found out that he adored his kids. He was proud of his kids. He was a doting father like a lot of people are. He was also a man of his times, you know. He was a man of his times, and he loved his boy. So I realized in my bones that my daddy loved me. And I never knew that before. And I also didn't, because I wasn't raised with a dad, I didn't know who I was as a woman. I think a lot of us learn who we are as women by our dad, good or bad. Mine was just empty. I just didn't know. And all of a sudden, here I felt loved by my dad, and all of a sudden I fell in love with my husband again. It was very magical. I remember the exact moment it happened. And that is a psychic change, the emotional shift that the Big Book promises us. It was a huge psychic change and emotional shift. And I took a different tack. I said, you know, we're in this together. We're a team. Neither one of us knows what we're doing. And what's really hilarious about that is he teaches human sexuality. But it's book knowledge. I went into theater because I needed to retrieve my emotional life. So it makes sense to me that he became a sex educator. So we have lots of videos to watch. And we would watch the videos. And we gave ourselves what we call naked dates. And it's pretty standard. We didn't go to sex therapy, but it's pretty standard where you just spend time with each other naked, no pressure for sex. You just are spending time with each other. And what I needed was a sexual voice. So I said earlier, I have a voice. That was hard to come by. You know, a lot of my recovery was knowing what I know, hearing what I hear, seeing what I see, and saying what I have to say. And saying what I have to say sexually, just kill me now. It was, you know, I would be in bed. Could you touch me there? could you try that? I mean, it just took all of my courage to ask those things because I was a good girl, and being a good girl, I think, is very overrated. I really wish I hadn't done that. And also asking him, where would you like to be touched? What do you like? And trying things and saying, do you like this? Do you like that? And feeling safe enough with each other to try what to us are very, very scary things. Another thing that came out in that fourth step was that I had gone after people all my life who just couldn't love me. There's an author who calls them turned backs. So if I could get somebody who can't love me to love me, then I must really be lovable. And, you know, that's like how many cookies are going to make me okay. And for Jim's my husband, I was like, how much does he have to change to make me okay? That's endless, just like there aren't enough cookies to make me okay. He can't change enough to make me okay. So I started realizing when I needed him to change, I needed to look at, okay, what's going on with me, where it's easier to look at him. Just like my family looked at me all my life. If only Susan could be thin, the family would be fine. If only Susan could change, we'd all be fine. I was their project to fix, and I realized how harmful and hurtful that is to try and change someone else to make me okay. So, so I'm learning. I'm still in the process of learning, and I do a lot on my own also. You can fill in the blanks there. Finding out what works, what doesn't work. And there's so much information out there now online. I mean, you can just Google stuff, not porn. Sexual empowerment, feminine empowerment. You know, it's not called the sexual revolution, but there is a revolution going on right now, really. If you get online and start Googling, it's amazing. And how do I say this? So I have a stronger sex drive than my husband. And that has been a challenging road for us. And what has happened sometimes is I have gained some weight. Not on purpose. I just, that need is not getting met. And I have tried to not have that need. And the only way I can stuff that need down is to eat a little more. And I have realized it's like amputating a part. It's like amputating an arm. It's not negotiable for me. I know for some people it is, but that's just my truth. So at one point I said, Jim, I am not going back. I am not going back to that body. I'm not going back to a size 12 or 14. I am going to do whatever it takes to stay the size and to be present and to be who I am. I'm not doing very... How much can I do? Sweetheart. And then he had a traumatic brain injury, a very serious traumatic brain injury. That was 3 years ago. And, you know, we were in this process of learning and growing, and I don't want to make this a lesson in traumatic brain injury, but first of all, his brain just needed to function, you know, and the brain does whatever it needs to do to survive, and sex isn't one of them. So I was kind of back at square one with that, although at the beginning it was like sex schmeck. So I just want him to live. I just want him to be alive. I want him to walk and talk. We'll deal with the sex later. But I also realized that I was having trouble with weight again. And that was the question that I said I would address. Let me get to it. Even though I work on and mostly I'm in acceptance with my higher weight, I gained 7 pounds after 10 years of maintaining. That's about what I've gained too. I still think I was happier and had better self-esteem and confidence when I was thinner. Have you experienced weight gain? Yes. And being able to feel great about yourself in spite of higher weight? Yes. I feel good about myself because my food is clean. I tried when I was at a heavier weight to be to do the big beautiful woman thing and have self-esteem and be a big beautiful woman. But the problem was I was doing violence to myself every day with food. And if you're doing violence to yourself and doing self-loathing behaviors instead of esteemable acts, it's pretty hard to love yourself. So I have gained a little weight, and I know that's because I'm not getting all my needs met. And I'm in acceptance about that. And I've had a voice. God works in mysterious ways, and I've never had to be stronger than in the last 3 years. I've never had to have more courage and say the things that I have to say than in the last 3 years. And especially, like, we're right up to the present now. About a month ago, I said, this is not okay. We're here now in your brain injury, and as we get more healing, I want to continue working on our sexual life. I don't want a sexless marriage, and there are some other things that we're going to work on too. So, you know, when you lose weight, before, when you're heavy, life has its ups and downs. And when you're thin, life has its ups and downs. And does it kill me that I'm... So here's the other thing. If I'm 7 pounds up or 7 or 10 pounds up, I absolutely do not feel as good as when I feel when I'm 10 pounds down. I, you know, when I'm 10 pounds down, I feel like I'm rocking a banging body for my age. Do I feel that way right now? No, I don't. Am I okay if I'm not rocking a banging body? Of course I am. Of course I'm absolutely fine because I am not my clothing size and my worth. I mean, think about all the people who accomplish great things in the world. Most of them aren't rocking a banging body. They're average, normal people. So it's okay for me to be an average, normal person today. And I hope that my higher power has that rockin' bangin' body again for me in the future. It's time for John now.
So I'm still John, still compulsive eater. One of my fellows, who actually is not here right now, was reminding me the one thing I didn't mention. When I first came to OA here in L.A., they used to have a nudist meeting. Oh, there he is.
Yeah.
And a nudist meeting. Now, being a stand-up comic, it's obviously a rimshot joke, but it really isn't. Think about it. You know, for all of us who had a problem to be able to, and God knows it was would be past my abilities, but, you know, so anyway, just want to mention. I'm not going to talk about as much about overt sex stuff as Susan, only, you know, part of it, you know, being a guy here, I hope everybody can really get that these feelings are the same. You know, the gender is different, but these are all the same feelings. I tend to talk a lot about my, you know, my fears, my neuroses, some of which I've worked out, some I still have. And, oh, by the way, I come from the brotherhood of, having dated somebody for a long time who then came out afterwards. So, yeah, it just seems to be one of those things we do. And, I try and say, yeah, well, you know, after me, she might as well go to, you know. She had the best guys, so, no. But, you know, it was funny. I remember being in therapy once, and I was talking about how bad I felt about myself, and my therapist asked, well, what do you look for in a woman? And I said, well, the fact that she shows any interest in me whatsoever, you know. And he was like, John, it's really time to bring that bar up a little, you know. But when you feel that way about yourself, it's like beggars can't be choosers. Grab whatever you can. And it's, you know, it was a sad thing to look back and thank God a lot of that's changed. The other thing when it came to like personality stuff, there was this great Woody Allen movie called Zelig that was an allegory about a guy who would physically change. If he was next to a black guy, he looked black. If he was next to a Hasidic Jew, he looked like a Hasidic. And the allegory is about being a people pleaser and not having a self. And that's the way I was. You know, if I met somebody and they said, well, they like Chinese opera, well, oh, I love Chinese opera or any of those things. And part of what program taught me is to be able to have a self. But there was part of me didn't want to have it because if I didn't agree 100%, why would you want to be with me? And you know, luckily the program has helped me, you know, sort of have a little bit more of a self in me, you know. The other thing I had was I joked I was the anti-stalker. You know, if you know guys that – you read about guys that won't take no for an answer to become stalkers. I was the opposite. If I went up and asked you out on Saturday and you said, well, gee, I'm sorry, I can't – I'm sorry I can't go out on Saturday, but, geez, I'd love to go out with you. You got to, gee, I can't. And I was, no, it's okay. You know, I meant just as friends anyway, you know. And the funny thing is the anti-stalker and the stalker just come around to the same circle, which is terrible fear of rejection, you know. And again, if I get rejected in any way, I'm the little fat kid back again, you know. And again, kids were brutal back then for me. And the other thing that happened as I went along and got better is I really had trouble saying no to people and, you know, not sex no, but just somebody, I had somebody who came up and was interested in me and I went out and I actually went out with her about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months because it was very hard, very empathetic and having had a life of being the rejector, to be the rejector was very hard for me. And it was a real disservice to her because I wasn't really interested and it went on way longer than it should have and it took me years to see that. I see other things in program. Now, not every one of these things is my experience, but there are interesting things that I see as, oh my God, this is also a problem for us. I sponsored somebody for a while in one of the other food programs, and she had been a star there, okay? She had been, you know, one of these people who did, you know, workshops and led retreats, and her story was that she had been heavy her whole life. She must have been like 300 something pounds, and then she lost her weight in that other program. Again, sort of became a star there. And then started a horrible relapse, and I became one of the, God knows, 8 sponsors she tried before, and then she actually left program and never came back. But her story was she'd been heavy her whole life, sort of like, you know, when I first came to the program, she lost all the weight, and she still didn't get anybody interested in her, you know? And what it was about was she was a normal-sized woman in L.A., but she was also a 50-year-old woman in L.A., and it's pretty brutal out there. And then it's and the part of her is, my God, now I don't even have the damn food, you know. And I remember thinking, God, there's another one of those things. It's like the idea of what if I lose all the weight and there's still nothing. And there's, you know, there could be a part of my crazy brain that never did that, but would be, well, better to hold on to it and have that as the excuse because I can somehow tell myself I have the power to change that at some point. You know, because you can lose weight, but you can't lose years, you know. And I remember that being bad. Going through dating, and let me just say this as a veteran, not a longtime veteran, dating sucks. Can I say, I have used up my lifetime supply of small talk, you know. And one of the problems when you spent your life in program, pretty much my whole adult life here, I tend to share on a deeper level too quickly. I remember going out this way, like a first date, and I'm talking about stuff, and all of a sudden I see this look on her face like, too much information. You know, it's not to say one can't get to that point, but that's just the way I came. And, you know, when it comes to intimacy and love, you know, that's different from sexual intimacy in some respects. You know, sex can actually be one of the most unintimate things sometimes in the right circumstances. And, but intimacy, you know, relies on a certain amount of trust. I grew up in a household where trust was a very scarce commodity. And being trustful was, you know, you were a target sometimes. And, you know, intimacy brings people closer together. And to be honest with you, there's one of the reasons I ended up stopping sponsoring the opposite sex. I did for a while, but it ends up sometimes, you know, being a problem. And so I sort of stopped that. But intimacy, you know, it's about being vulnerable, you know, and when I was heavy, there was a part of me that used it to be invulnerable, to be big and to not have to deal with that. And, you know, it's harder, you know, I always say it's harder to be naked emotionally than it is to be naked physically, and naked physically is still not that easy for me. I heard a great story once in my 34 years in program, and I thought it was just so profound. And it was a person got up and talked about the story of the lobster out in the real world. And the lobster in the real world, you know, in its habitat, has only one defense mechanism, and that's its shell. You know, and, you know, it's what keeps it alive from predators. But once a year, it has to molt. It has to lose its shell. Because while the shell is its protection, it also inhibits its growth. And to me, that is a perfect analogy of being vulnerable and to be willing to put yourself out there and to be willing to get hurt too, you know. The program never says anywhere we're not going to get hurt, but it says you will get through it. You know, you have resources, you have friends and God squad and people like that I can talk to about it now. I came from a family that said, suck it up. You know, if you're hurt, suck it up. And through the, you guys to teach me that I can, if I'm hurt, I can talk to people and it'll help, you know. Yeah, the other, one of the other analogies of the movie City of Angels where it talks about stepping off a building and you know, the idea that it – thank you. Sorry. It's my aspirin. You know, that you be willing to step off. And about, you know, in my opinion, a metaphor about love, you know, to be willing to step out and say I love you and you don't know what's coming back, you know. And and then getting into relationships, you know, I was in another, I think I can talk about Al-Anon, right? It's not exactly a super outside issue, but they have a little checklist in my ACA group, and a couple of things, boy, they hit me. You know, do you confuse pity with love as you did the problem drinker? Do you attract and or seek people who tend to be compulsive or abusive? And these are definitely me. You know, psychologists will talk about, you know, people will go back to what's familiar over what's good because it's just part of human nature. And the other one that really hit me is, do you cling to relationships because you're afraid of being alone? You know, and a couple of times I was in things and it's like part of my little fat kid brain is, but this could be the last person on earth I'm ever going to be able to snare, you know, take hostage, you know, into my thing. And I realize it's not. I mean, and again, this is all stuff that's in there at a level that I wouldn't even bring it out. Cause, you know, if you bring things out verbally and you say, God, that's the stupidest thing, but it's in there at a different level. And I remember, you know, and I mean, it's sort of a joke that we comedians used to do about how when you're not in a relationship, all you can see is people walking around arm in arm in love and you're by yourself. And it's like, God, even Hitler had a girlfriend, you know, you know. And, But yeah, and to change and to have an adult relationship, to be able to have an adult relationship where two people want each other as opposed to needing each other, that was always, you know, a little bit hard to be in that place. And, I, you know, thank God today I am in a wonderful relationship. And again, it's about having a self. I remember once one of the things my shrink said to me was we were talking about my ability with women and you know, how my wonderful, I used like James Bond as my idea of, whoa, I want to be James Bond, you know, walking, hello, darling, how are you, you know, like somehow it came with a British accent. That was the key. And he said, you know, John, if you got good tomorrow and you were able to go out and meet, you know, 99 women and they all say yes and you conquer them, that 100th woman who says no is going to make you fall into 1,000 pieces because you have no self there. And it was really true that I had to learn that differently, you know. I was also one of those people we were talking about it the other day about. I was one of those people who was every girl's friend, you know. I'm your, you know, oh, you're a friend. Like, you know, you need a friend, get a dog, okay? You know. God, the worst was a woman actually said to me one day, put your hands on my shoulders. I like you. You're safe. Oh. It's like, here's the knife. Just cut them off. Get it over with. Why? But, you know, how emasculating that is, and to go through, and especially when they're a little overweight, that you're just everybody's friend as opposed to being somebody you'd be interested in. Part of it, it's like I was always the nice guy, you know. I would have my female friends, you know, they'd go chase somebody, the last person they should, who's horribly abusive, and then they come back and cry, and I go, you know, there's a reason they call them bad boys, you know. but, you know, and some of that is... you know, I hear people say in meetings sometimes, oh, I got a bad people picker, you know. And I said, maybe flip it around. Maybe you have a bad people filter, that there's nice people out there like I used to be that you just, for whatever reason, they don't excite you or whatever. And maybe you give them a chance. You may find out there's more to them. And that was really hard as a guy, you know. There used to be a guy named Andrew over in AA, and he and his wife used to give these things about relationships. And he said, you know, I believe in using the traditions on your relationship sometimes, you know, and I love that, you know, especially the first, you know, our common welfare comes first. You know, we are two people, we're two self-absorbed people, and the relationship for me has to come first, you know, and other things. We are autonomous, you know, we are self-supporting through our own contributions and things like that to help really work on an adult relationship. And again, not be something where one is leaning on the other. We're both standing up straight. And, I heard one of the funniest lines I heard once, a guy was talking to, I don't know if he was speaking or whatever, but he was giving, and he was like about 70 years old. He'd been in this relationship for like 40 years, and he was from West Hollywood, gay guy, you know, nobody at that time before 40 years, or maybe not a lot. And the person said, well, how do you make that work? And he says, I get up every morning, I look in the mirror, and I say, hey, you ain't no prize neither. You know? And like, you know, I say, you'll hear, you know, forgive for our trespasses. I got to remember, hey, you know, I'm no prize, and I need to remember, you know, that if I want, you know, if I want to be accepted, then I have to be willing to accept too. And that's part of a lovely thing. I remember I was in Oakland at that Oakland thing. Julie, you were part of that. And somebody said, their sponsor said to them one day, other people are not imperfect versions of you. Isn't that a great line? But it was so true. And it wasn't like I was saying any of this stuff. And it's actually in Dr. Paul's, in that other paragraph where it says something to the effect of, all the world's a stage, and I was the chief critic. And I was more than willing to tell you what the problems are because I know you wanted to be perfect like I did. And you know what? That's the hardest thing is to be willing, restraint of pen and tongue, man. And boy, is that a key in relationships sometimes, you know? Or as I like to say, restraint of pen and tongue and send button. Boy, these days, that's the one that catches me. And I really do believe the people who do the best are people who just accept the people. I mean, there's a part of me, I think I would find somebody who had like 90% of what I wanted, and I go, oh, that's great. Now I'll work on banging that other 10% into the way I want it to. And now, no, you know, there's things... you know, drive me crazy about my wife and things that drive her crazy, you know, that I drive her crazy about. And to just say, it's okay. This is the package. I bought the package. I'm happy with the package. There's an old joke. Having been an ex-comic, a lot of my stuff either comes from, you know, it comes from the big book, but some of it's Bugs Bunny cartoons, for God's sake. But there's an old joke about the woman who marries the guy and then says, I want you to change the way you do this. And then I want you to change the way you do this. Yeah, I want you to change this. And then she says, you're not the man I married.
But
the idea of sexuality, I talk a little about that. You know, Woody Allen used to say, he wrote an article once for the New Yorker. He was like the sex columnist, and he said, is sex dirty? And he says, only if you're doing it right, you know? But, you know, the reality is there is so much, and I grew up in that generation too, the societal guilt over thinking and talking about sex and all these things. And my, you know, my mother catching me with Playboys, and I'm having, you know, hearing this. Why are you, you know, the French have a word that doesn't exist in the English language, which is the thing you think of 20 minutes later that you should have said when the person said it, you know. And for her, I should have said, would you prefer I had pictures of guys, you know. But there was. I grew up at a time, oh, sex was dirty and sex was this. And the other thing, and again, from a guy's standpoint, I probably even shouldn't talk about this, but the double standard between men and women. Guys are studs, women are sluts if they're sexually active. And why? I mean, who decided? Well, I know who decided. Men decided it. You know, it's true, you know. And the truth is sometimes men and women do see things differently. For some guys, you know, some guys are, you know, I tend to be in a long-term relationships, but some guys can play the field, and I'm like, you know, and it's to them, it's the sex act is no different than like another bodily function. But a lot of women, I remember there was a person who used to give these workshops, I won't say her name because it's an outside thing, who's telling women not to do that because there's a hormone in the body called oxytocin. It's called the bonding hormone, and women will get attached, and, you know, this, like an episode of Seinfeld where they're trying to do that and not, and then of course it just never works. And maybe if you can handle that, fine, but you know, for a lot of people they can't, you know. There's also the concept of how sex has a lot of power to it, sexuality and lust, and like you were saying that, sometimes it's a scary thing how, oh my God, you know, this thing's taking hold and dealing with it. You know, and the idea, and then for me, you know, not having a great body image, oh, I gotta, you know, at some point, if I'm gonna have sex, I'm gonna have to get naked in front of me. You know, it's not like the movies where people have sex and manage to leave enough on that they don't get an R rating. And then sublimation, you know, Susan, you were talking about that. I heard a great line recently. If you're substituting food for sex, you're not even gonna be able to get into your own pants. I love that one. But, you know, and then the other thing about sex is performance. You know, guys in particular, oh, my God, you know, am I going to be – and it isn't just guys. It's men and women. Am I going to measure up to whoever's exes are, you know, am I going to – and, you know, that neuroses and the being able to somehow, again, through the big book, through the steps and working on myself and saying I'm just the person I'm supposed to be – I can stop doing that crazy comparison and, you know, the shortcut to insanity, you know. And, you know, having been in marriage, you know, some of this isn't easy either. I mean, I've done, like, retreats and, it, you know, a lot of it will be about the problems in marriage. And, God, the stupidest thing, like, timing. It's like you want to have, okay, have your girl call my girl and we'll work out a, you know what I mean, you know, if you lead busy lives, if you have kids and, you know. But it's an important part of life. It's an important part of marriage. It's an important part of intimacy and bonding and to be able to find that time and way to do that and to get out of the rut. You know, the idea of God, everything. Oh, God, Carol Leifer, another comic used to talk about. You have to even married for a while. It's almost like a choreographed dance. You do that, then I do this, then you do that. And I do. But the idea of being able to make it fresh again, especially if you've been married. I've been married 10 years now. And the other thing that will happen is sometimes it's one or the other is interested and the other isn't on any given night. And, you know, I can get it. My wife's tired. She wants to go to bed. But as soon as she says that, as loving as I know she is, and as I intellectually understand it, there's still that little fat kid in there, and it's rejection, you know. And again, I can understand it, but there is that little thing, and you know, I have to realize it. You know, there was one of the questions Susan got about like those things, you know, that come up, and I got to realize. There's a part of me that's never going to go away. It's that little five-year-old. I got raised in a family where if I said something that wasn't congruent with intellectual whatever, you know, about a feeling, it's stupid to feel that way. Quit feeling that way. Well, I feel the way I feel. And sometimes the feeling is a five-year-old, but I gotta allow it to come out. Or I'm just, you know, I would try for many years. I try to intellectually override however I was feeling. And it's like putting a Band-Aid on a wound without cleaning it out. So now I can sort of let that little kid say, ow, that sort of hurt a little. And be the parent going, well, you know, you understand this has happened. You've been on the other side of that. But to let it get out and say, oh, okay, not to stuff it down, because that's what I tended to do a lot in my life, is to try and stuff down. And, you know, the other thing, you know, it's really funny. I will still, and it's so crazy, I'm a guy. We will tend to still look at women, even married, and get ideas in our head. Now, it's not we're going to follow through on them or anything, but I would feel guilty about that. And there used to be this great couple in OA in Manchester, Connecticut, Buzz and Shirley. Shirley was this little, about that tall. And she'd be standing and go, God, look at the butt on that guy. And I'd be like, Shirley, you're married. He says, hey, just because you're on a diet doesn't mean you can't look at the menu. And I got to remember, because there's a part of me that gets all neurotic about that. And, you know, I guess it comes down to the, you know, what's the solution? And for me, it's working on these character defects. And believe it or not, the thing I used to roll my eyes at, you know, positive affirmations and things like that, and being able to think about it. Oh, I just want to tell you one other thing. Be careful what you, if you're a cynic, you make fun of when you're younger, because it'll come back and bite you in the butt. I was new to program, and I would be sitting there, and there'd be women talking about how they came in, they did well, and then it got too much attention, and it was too scary, and they went out, and they came back. And this is the 26-year-old idiot, a-hole guy. Well, you know, most, you know, 26-year-old guy, a-hole, pretty much redundant. I'd be like, what's with these women? They're not happy if they're fat, they're not happy if they're thin, they're just, these are people who aren't happy. Well, fast forward about 15 years or 10 years or something like that. I'm in my first marriage and I'm a comic and I'm out on the road. Okay, and I'm out on the road for 2, 3, 4 weeks. Okay. Now comics aren't like rock stars who get, you know, hotel keys thrown on, but an occasional opportunity would come up. And guess what? That was right when my relapsing got really bad. And in looking back and writing on that kind of stuff, it was all about, well, if I get fat, nobody's going to come up, and I'm not going to have to deal with the possible infidelity, you know? So it's like, it's amazing how I watch that kind of thing over and over. You never know what you're going to say, because it's going to... One of my favorite lines in program is, be nice to your sponsees. You never know when they're going to be your sponsor. And, you know, again, it's about, again, just, and I'll wrap up, that it's about doing all this work. You know, if you do the work on, it'll help you on many levels, but this will be one of them. To find yourself, to find a self, to be really, you know, like you said, I'm okay, I'm enough. And for many years, I didn't have that. And again, I went through life, you know, like Oliver Twist, hoping somebody would give me a morsel. And it doesn't have to be that way anymore. So anyway, that's the end of my share. Yes.
All right, it's time to write again. I'm going to buy that aging one that happened yesterday. There was a panel on aging in OA. All right, so I'd like you to do some reflecting on the last time you wanted to overeat, or the last time that you overate, or if you're hungry now. What are you hungry for? What were you hungry for? Specifically, what have you been hungry for sexually, romantically, or sensually?
Clarification. Mm-hmm.
Right. Love that. Yeah. Well, exactly. So when I want chips, I'm not a big chip girl. My thing is chocolate. When I want cookies, what do I really want? What am I really hungry for? So if I'm wanting to eat inappropriately, as opposed to when I'm truly hungry and it's time for a meal, if when I want to eat inappropriately, I'm hungry for something. And my answer has always been food. And my recovery is finding all these different ways of addressing my real hungers instead of one way. And, getting down to what I'm hungry for sexually and romantically and in intimacy is hard work. It's tough. I don't know that you're going to be able to do it in 10 minutes, but we can have a taste of it, right? And if you don't feel hungry for anything, I just invite you to eat a little less. It becomes pretty clear pretty fast. So what are you emotionally hungry for right now? Or what were you emotionally hungry for the last time you wanted to overeat or overate? And then list some possible ways to fill those hungers, even if you are unable to do so at this time. List some possible ways to fill those hungers, even if you are unable to do so at this time. So that's about me knowing that I can trust myself to take care of myself and to get my needs met. I did not get my needs met. I met them all with sweets. So we're going to give you 10 minutes tops to do this. Do you need more time? Yes, you can continue. We have a lot of Ask It Basket questions. So feel free to continue writing while we're answering these questions. Shall I go ahead and start? Okay, a couple of them are addressed to me specifically. I lost the weight. However, I'm a pear-shaped body. I go to buy clothes. Only 1 out of 30 pants fit. Always requires extensive alterations. How do I accept this? Yep, same with me. Waist always needs to come in. I'm also right in between a petite, whether I was a size 14 or an 8 or a 6, I'm still a petite. And they always need hemming. So my answer is pretty simple. The acceptance is everything I buy needs alterations. And I just find the cheap places. We are all different sizes and all different shapes. And designers design for boy bodies. My personal theory about that is because most of the designers who are designing like boy bodies. So maybe very politically incorrect. So I have a small waist, right? I get to have them altered. Susan, do you believe it is okay to have a sexless marriage? Can one be truly authentic and still maintain a sexless marriage? Yes, I can be truly authentic and still maintain a sexless marriage, and that means that I talk about it and complain about it and bug him. And I don't really like doing that. And do I believe it's okay to have a sexless marriage? Not for me. It doesn't work for me because I want to overeat. That tells me, I feel so fortunate to be a compulsive overeater because it's a barometer for me. It tells me it's my true north, And if I'm getting off course, something's going on that I've got to look at. And that has happened enough for me to absolutely know, it's not okay for me to be in a sexless marriage. And, we're on the same page. It's not for him either. We're both in program. We're both willing to look at it. We're both willing to learn and do the work. And that's where I feel really blessed. I'm going to look at these while John answers a few. Okay.
I'm going to try and fire through. By the way, there were some questions here that I think were written before we shared some of the things, so they'd sort of been answered, so we may just let those go because we got so many. How do you avoid oversharing and meeting somebody? Well, like I said, that came up for me. And one of the things I think I learned after that too much information date was, if it's going to work out, there'll be time. And maybe I just, you know, if, you know, I find, you know, people aren't really that interested in what I eat, especially if I'm on a dinner date, you know. And if somebody says anything, I love the universal, I'm allergic. They shut their brain right off at that. I'm allergic, you know. And they ask, I say, well, I break out in fat, you know. have either of you dated in program? What's your opinion of it? Well, I dated a bit. The person that was in the middle, we had a very tempestuous relationship, and I said, that's it. No more dating in program. My therapist said, you're fishing in a shallow pond. which isn't true, but. And then my wife, as it turned out, was in program, but I didn't know that. I met her at a party. It was a program person, but he was also in the entertainment business, and I met a lot of people, and I thought she was a manager. And it can be really tough, especially if it doesn't work out. It's almost like you have to have, okay, I get custody of the Wednesday meeting, you know, and then you have friends, and then they may know each other. So I it's just like it says, boy meets girl on OA campus has to be, you know, dealt with very carefully. How often do you weigh yourself, and have you overcome the idea that the numbers are information, not ammunition, especially when you're up after a few years of absence? Yeah, and I've said that to my sponsees. I was in another program once every 30 days, and then every week after you're near goal weight. It's just like you said, it's just information for me, and it's just I call it my reality check. You know, I can tell myself I'm doing fine, but if I get on the scale and I'm up 10 pounds, you know, either gravity stopped being a constant or something may be going on. And I have sponsors, oh, I can't do that. I used to weigh myself all the time. I say, well, you're on a food abstinence where you used to binge all the time. Can't you be on a scale abstinence? And, you know, some people can't, but I really try and advise it that that's a good way to be careful with denial. What's your advice for somebody who's interested in someone outside program? How do you talk about OA recovery? Well, it's a little bit of what we were talking about a second ago, but I found taking it slowly, you know, and then start to say, well, you know, I've had some food issues in my life. I used to be very heavy, and then maybe somewhere down the road, or if it comes up organically, I try as best as I can not to shove it on people. When I first came into program, oh, you had to find out I was in OA all the right away because I was, you know, gung-ho. Now I don't. I tend to, you know, it hasn't happened in a long time, but, you know, to be careful and bring it up, especially if I'm, you know, I'm meeting somebody and want to help 12-step, you know. My 12-step thing is to just, I'll find a way to say, oh, you didn't know me when I was 100 pounds more. And trust me, when I was 100 pounds more and somebody mentioned they were 100 pounds more and they were thin, it's just like casting out a little thing and wait for the bite. So anyway, you want to take some more of these? Okay.
On page 69 of the big book, we are not to be the arbiter of any sexual conduct. How do you talk about sex without being judgmental? Right, so, you know, in the early years, I was judgmental. It was his fault and he needed to do it differently. And that was a way for me to avoid taking responsibility for myself. So, you know, it's I statements. I feel this. I want this. Can you do this? That's an actually really easy way to not have it be judgmental. And I remind him, we're in this together. We love each other. We're safe with each other. We can do this. And if I remember that we're a team and that there's not a scapegoat and that we're partners on this journey, then it's not judgmental. Absolutely.
Well, I read that in terms of like taking a fifth step sometimes. I don't know whether, you know, and I've heard all kinds of stuff in fifth steps. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, as long as it's a consenting person, that should be the end of it. You know, I, like you said, not arbiter. I'm not here. I don't really have a lot of hang-ups, but at the very least, it just as long as it's somebody consenting, that's the only thing I would ever, where I would draw a line on anything like that. So I don't have to sponsor Cosby.
What is your relationship with the scale? How does it affect your self-esteem and self-image? I've tried lots of different things. I've thrown my scale away. I've weighed once a month. I've weighed once a week. And what I've been doing for many, many years is I weigh myself once a day. I weigh myself once a day when I get up, I'm naked, after I use the bathroom. And so it's the same barometer every morning, and I really have to just make that data. It's information only. I am not my size. I am not my weight. It just tells me how I'm doing with my true north. And that's all it is to me. How does it affect your esteem and self-image? Yeah, it's just a number. But that was that's a practice. It was something that I had to practice daily. That used to be like it would tell me whether I was going to have a good day or a bad day. And I had to like do some spiritual work before and after I got off the scale. And now it's just a number. Have you ever looked at pictures from the past and wondered, why did I not like what I looked like? Yes, and I bet we all have. You know, and I was a great-looking teenager. And that's true today. Now, I also know that I can look at pictures of me 15 years from now. I'll look at pictures of me today and say, why did I not like what I looked like? So that helps me today to know I'm fine today. And my skin's going to be saggier 15 years from now. So I'm going to look at pictures and say, oh, look at your skin. How do I find more acceptance of my body when I know I'm gaining weight because I'm binging? So my personal experience is that I cannot accept my body when I'm binging. And I mentioned this earlier, binging is doing violence to myself. It's hurting myself. It's doing damage to myself. It is telling myself I don't have a right to exist. I don't have a right to be here. I don't have a right to my needs. It is killing off my... I overate to kill off my spirit. That is why I did it, to stay small. So the best thing that I can do is when I fall down, get back up. Resume. Just resume. And I keep marching towards my true north. And I do fall down. And I'm very honest about my program and my recovery. I fall down, I get up. And before program, I couldn't get back up.
More self-hate. How do you get on, even though you know your defects of character and have a habit of hating yourself? First of all, I don't like the phrase character defects. It's just always bothered me, and I like to say defense mechanisms. These were defense mechanisms that helped us. You know, we weren't crazy. We did them for a reason. They helped us in some way. But now they're, you know, in terms of defense, they've gone to the other side. They're on the offense against me. And part of that feeling better is knowing if you're working a program, you're in the process of changing them. You know, it talks about making amends in our steps. Well, it doesn't say make apologies. It says make amends, which is to amend and to change our behavior. And as we do that, we start to feel better ourselves. We start to lose that self-hate. We shall not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. That means, yeah, I did act like an absolute jerk in my life. You know, there's just no doubt about it. But I'm trying my best to not act like a jerk today. How do I accept my body as it is when my career is largely based on my looks? Well, you know, for me, it comes down, I think all of the program comes down to the serenity prayer. You know, you bring it down to three little sentences. It's accepting the things I can't change. You know, if you're in a place where it's about the looks, that's the way it is. But you have the ability to change the things you can, which is to be where you need to be. Like it was said earlier, you know, for me, it's about health today. It's not about looking in the mirror. You know, like you said, you know, when you hit a certain age, everything's, you know, I heard once, you're not getting older, you're getting lower. Yeah, and everything's sagging. But you know what? If I hadn't been in program, I wouldn't have that problem, because dead people don't have sagging skin, and I would be dead. I know that. So it's a matter of accepting the things you can't change, and just being willing. We got a program. It's here to help us, and that's the thing that'll change. Anything you want to add on that? Or no? No. I have a problem, I think, of denial. I often think of myself as heavier than I am, and I look in the reflection in the mirror, and I see I'm kind of shocked. You know, why is that? What's called body dysmorphia. I think I've had that in my life, too. You know, you look in a mirror. I always joke there's a little wire on the mirror, and if I get on the scale, it pushes the mirror out, and I think I'm huge, you know, depending on the number. And healthy to feel better about myself, and forcing reality. Again, it's about doing this stuff. You know, I can't sit there and tell myself I'm a wonderful person if I'm binging every day. Because if I really believed I was a wonderful person, I wouldn't be binging every day. And to then put it down and go and say, well, I'm a good person. Gosh darn it. Again, you know, it's, you know, cognitive dissonance. You get some more?
Yeah, we're going very quickly, because there were so many, and how great that you're asking questions. This one's to me. Susan, can you Actually, I'm going to go to this other one. How can I answer well-intentioned family members who say, if you just lost 30 pounds, you might get a boyfriend, or if you just lost weight, you could have a happy life? So this deserves a fuller answer, but I'm going to give you the short answer, and I really mean it. Thanks for sharing. Or that fabulous Al-Anon phrase, you could be right. And oftentimes when I say you could be right, I think, but you're wrong. But you could be right. I don't say you are right. You could be right. So you can probably fill in the blanks on that. It comes from me knowing it's not about the weight, and it's your problem, not my problem. You are using me as a distraction from whatever you don't want to feel with by using my weight.
I want to quote somebody I really love in program, and she's giving the forgiveness workshop, Sheila J., and she had this with her family and would try very nicely and subtly and through program and love tell them it's not, you know. And finally it didn't work, so she finally just had to look and say, you're done. You're not allowed to say that anymore. My weight is me. It's none of your business. Stop it. And sometimes if you have a dense, I hate to say it that way, person, you have to be direct. Take the power. It's your body. It's not theirs. And even though they may say it with love, sometimes you just have to put the hand up.
I did say that to my mother. And so then instead of telling me, I would get this. You know, and then it was like, what are you looking at? Susan, can you please talk about getting through heartbreak? I fell in love with an unavailable man, and I'm learning how to feel and accept and trust HP. I've never felt this and really want to overcome falling for unavailables and feel hope. What is your hope around this? So again, it's these 6 and 7 steps. That was one of my character defects, was going after people who can't love me. And then the recovery in that and the magic of the 12 steps is I can feel it now. I can feel it in my body when there's a turn back. I can have a whole room full of people who love me, but if somebody's scowling at me, I gotta get them to love me. And as soon as I feel that now, it's like, nope. Go where the love is. I go to the meetings where the love is. I find where the love is. I go where the love is. You know that old thing, don't go to the hardware store for candy? Sometimes here we change it to don't go to the hardware store for flowers. So I recognize the hardware now. And I don't go after the hardware. There's plenty of people in this world who love me and want me in their life. Why? I don't need to go after the people who aren't able to do that. I think...
Okay. I just want to say I felt bad, so the people who didn't get to share, Ellie and Nick, I think first, if you want to still share, if you don't, that's fine, but on the first session, and then we're going to open it up for sharing.
Okay.
It's a race. And Nick's in the lead.
Together.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Nick, Compulsive Overeater. Okay, so here we go. What was I hungry for the last time I overate? Sexually, romantically, emotionally. The first one that came up was I wanted to be comfortable being alone. A lot of things what happens is my desire to eat happens kind of after I finish this work, you know, a day of work, so I'm kind of an evening eater, you know, and... So at work, I'm kind of getting things done, and then when it's done, I'm kind of alone in the evening. And a lot of times, I don't necessarily like that company, so I'll kind of veg out in front of the TV or something. So there's something about that that makes me kind of tense and makes me a little nervous. So that was one of the things that came out. And then kind of on the other side of that is I think about I don't have a companion, so it would be great to have a companion, you know. So that comes up in my mind. Is that ever going to... kind of happened for me, and whew, okay, let that one go. Anyways, that kind of stuff. I'll stick with those two. And impossible ways to fill those hungers, even if not able to do it right now, is then with the aloneness, I guess I have a problem sometimes being present with that, so I guess I can maybe learn how to be just present, just be, you know. Take some time to do that, maybe some meditation. And then just, obviously, just, yeah, be okay with myself. And then you mentioned about having a self, you know. Well, a lot of times I don't know, you know, what my self is, you know. What do I want? And have the courage to be myself, you know what I mean? Just be happy with it. A lot of times I want you to tell me who I am. I want you to give me that kind of validation. You know better than me for some reason. Maybe I should know better than you about who I am. I don't know. There's a concept. So the companion thing, I figured maybe it would be good to reach out into the gay community for friends and maybe some kind of dating. That might be a good idea. So that comes up. That's a scary, scary thing for me. You know what I mean? That feeling of rejection, that feeling of, like, how do I break that from, oh, that person is attractive, to actually going up and then getting over the fact that, how come he isn't coming up to me, you know? Well, I've tried that one. It ain't working. So I might as well take the, you know, go be active. Anyways, that's tough. So that's why I put that up. I make jokes of it. But the reality is that it is a deep inside fear and a scary thing. So maybe I can have some friends, you know. Maybe I can have some wingmen to go with me. So it's not so scary, you know what I mean? Anyways, I thought of that too. And then the emotional one, this is a tough one. A lot of times if I'm overeating, you know, I could be bloated, you know what I mean? So I kind of feel fat. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so fat. And part of the thing is I should probably get some facts about that kind of a fear, you know? In my mind, it's absolutely true. And I'll be done in just a second. The facts would be as well, maybe I should step on a scale and see if I'm as fat as I think I am. A lot of the times I'm not, you know? Most of the times I'm not. So I'm like, and I'm surprised. I'm like, oh, okay. Anyways, getting facts over some of that stuff is a good thing. And I put get facts to face the fear. Because I'm scared about stuff. Why don't I get some data that I was told right here so that I can kind of make a better decision. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Ellie, compulsive overeater. And I'm actually going to address something that came up for me in the first part. John, thank you for that paragraph, because that has been instrumental in changing my feelings. And I wish we had a big book here, if anybody does. And I'd also like to thank Susan for that analogy of the dogs, that they are what they are, who they are. They don't look to others and wish to be different than they are. Thank you. So I came in. I'm sorry, this is not going to work for me. I need the stories. Could you turn to 417? I came into program 9 years ago, and I absolutely hated myself. Through the process of working the steps, working the program, finding a higher power, I don't feel that way anymore. To me, I have been graced with love and self-acceptance. And I'm going to read that part. I knew you wanted perfection just as I did. AA and acceptance have taught me there's a bit of good in the worst of us and a bit of bad in the best of us. And here it is. That we are all children of God, and that we each have a right to be here. When I complain about me or about you, I am complaining about God's handiwork. I am saying that I know better than God. And I always paraphrase that to, in my head, Who are you to criticize God's work? That paragraph has helped me. That's a paragraph I share with my sponsees. I lost a large amount of weight when I came in at 150 and 5'1". I got down to 118. I'm not that anymore. And I've had to accept that. It's 9 years later. It is what it is. I'm okay with who I am. I'm okay with my body. And the scale will never, as far as I'm concerned, tell me what I want to hear. So it sits there, and I just don't go to it. And when I have that thought, oh, I'd love to see what I weigh today, I hear God say, you're not going to like it. So anyway, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Ellie. We have time for like one burning desire. Does anybody have a real burning desire? Come on.
Answer the questions that were given to me. Let me get to where they were. Okay. Hi, my name is Bert, emotional compulsive overeater. The thing is about being accepted and accepting yourself. That is the number one thing that I've gotten here, because even in the first page of the acknowledgement of Overeaters Anonymous, the book, is that we have the power of love and acceptance, and that even they say it worked for us, it'll work for you. And at the very end of every meeting, we always say promises, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They work for us. They will work for us if you work on them. All right, and then we always say, keep coming back, it works if you work it. And I say, work it good. I always say, work it good, because we have to. The thing is, the emotional part, one of those emotional parts that brought me to OA is being lonely, watching TV, and a half gallon of Haagen-Dazs. You know, that was one of those things that I coped with my sexuality. And being and trying to accept myself, you know what I'm saying? The thing is that we play the character. We have this ego or this pride of being the best. I be the best airline mechanic and pilot that there is. Oh, that's so masculine. You know what I mean? You know. And then you got we have this image. And in my culture, we have what they call the bears. You know, they're masculine men. We hide behind our beards. We hide behind our hairiness, and we hide behind our strength. And yes, men are pigs. Women are tigers. Ah, you guys, you know, I don't care. Women can be, because I have a lot of girlfriends who are very domineering. This is what I want. This is what I... And you know what? The thing is that what it really comes down to it is, what are our sex ideals as compared to our sex ideas? And those we have to write down. That's a fourth step, you know? So the thing is that when I'm lonely, when I get hungry, when I want to snack, it kills the loneliness. When I want to eat a cookie, it's because I've been chatting on the internet site, trying to make a connection. There's that barrier, but I can talk all about everything that I want, but deep down inside, I have the lust and the horniness, you know? I want to, like in the movie Rent, I want to howl tonight, you know? So the thing is that, I'm going to wrap it up right now real quick, and that is, when it came to the solutions, we have the solutions. We know what we have to do. Gotta watch the pitfalls of being, going from one addiction, food, to another, which is sex. I have to watch that addiction. Number one, that's a pitfall. Number two, there is nothing wrong with pleasuring yourself. I see no wrong with it. Because the thing is that this too shall pass. You know? And then, but when I say taking care of yourself, take a shower, get dressed, primp yourself up, change your clothes, look in the mirror and say, I love yourself. I love me. You know, go for a walk, change the position that you're in, and then the prayer and meditation. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Thank
you. Way to take a suggestion. We're going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 69. You've heard the joke. It's ironic that the part about sex is on page 69. 68 and 69. And it starts with now about sex. But I'm going to skip towards the middle where it says on page 69. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? And here's the prayer. We asked God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. We asked God what we should do about each specific matter. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal. I also want to say something very briefly. John was scheduled to do this workshop, and he asked me to join him because he felt like should have a woman here as well, and I think that takes a great deal of recovery and humility. Thank you. Thank you. It's a privilege to share the podium with him. So we are going to close with the third step prayer.
Again, if anybody's having trouble with relapse, see me later.
Thank you, Susan.